Welcome to the Stories of School Leadership podcast, inspirational leaders, shared experiences, creating connections. I'm Emma Lurie and thank you for joining me as I share the journey, stories and inspiration of amazing educational leaders from all around the world. In this first episode, I am talking to Lewis Webb, who is a head teacher and an amazing colleague of mine that I've had the privilege of working with for many years. Lewis is so inspirational, so passionate about supporting children, supporting families, and he shares some of the challenges that he's faced recently in this episode. He talks about being brave and how we need to think really carefully about the things that we hold dear to us. He's got lots of inspiration to share, so I can't wait for you to hear it. Let's get into it. Hi Lewis, it's so amazing to have you on the podcast. That feels a bit of a weird thing to say, but it's really fantastic to welcome you. Thank you so much for spending some time with me. So we have worked together, which is one of the main reasons why I wanted to invite you on, because you've massively inspired me in my work, and I am really fascinated to find out a bit more about you. I hope I'm going to learn some new things in our little conversation.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. So just give us a bit of a, who are you, where are you from, and then we'll get into the nitty gritty.
My favourite colour as well, Emma. Do I need to go with that? No. Lovely. Yeah. Hi, I'm Lewis. I'm from Cornwall and have lived and grown up in Cornwall and Devon. So I'm a Southwest boy. And I work in a rural seaside school in Devon at the moment, live just outside of Exeter, and have done all of my teaching in Devon and all of my leadership journey in Devon as well.
Devon boy, perfect. Devon and Cornwall. We can have an argument about cream teas and scones a bit later. So
I'll win that one.
Yeah, you probably will. There we are. So it would be really great. I'm so fascinated to find out about people's journeys into leadership, but A, because I'm just a bit of a nosy posy, but also because I think that a lot of the time, certainly in my own leadership, I just didn't hear enough voices about how people got into it and how they were feeling. I definitely thought, oh my gosh, everything's perfect for everybody else. And I didn't necessarily hear all the other stuff that's going on. So I know that you're going to be really open and honest with us and share some of the things that have kind of inspired you and a bit about your journey in this session. So would you mind telling us a little bit about your own kind of education, like what your experiences were growing up of school and how you felt about it?
Absolutely. And let's be honest, we worked together for years, Emma, haven't we? And when you're working in schools, you're either working on your school improvement plan and working with things in schools. And then in your downtime, when you're hanging out with each other, you don't want to talk about school and education as much. So what's really nice here, I don't think we've ever had a conversation really about my schooling or your schooling, which is uncharted territory. But yeah, my schooling was quite straightforward, to be honest. I grew up in Penryn and went to a little Catholic primary school. But I think my schooling really made me the educationalist I am today, because there are big players in my life that all are connected to schools. My primary school head teacher, blessing Mr. De Silva, that's no longer with us, like Benji Thomas, I can remember a chap that was a deputy head of my secondary school. And if I think of my own dad as well, being a teacher and assistant head of a secondary school growing up, three massive male figures in my life, all connected to schools, that had like lots of things in common that just really promoted values that sort of drew me towards education. But yeah, I was a little anxious chap growing up. You know, I found school a little bit overbearing at times. I was a bit of an overthinker. I had my own little struggles with my mental health. I used to be really conscientious and think about things. But it never really deterred me from school. I wasn't a school refuser. I enjoyed school. And I found my groove. And I always had, a place within school. And I think a lot of that came back to my personal hobbies in rugby, as a, like sport, and my friendship groups and growing up in the community. And I was able to use that to sort of get through school, which can be a tricky place. But I don't think I really truly blossomed and found my groove till university. And that's quite a long time, but I really found uni was the time where I became a proper learner. And I think there was a lot of hindrance I didn't realize in my learning journey until I got to uni. It probably was the free laptop for dyslexia screening that helped with that. But actually, I realized there was lots of undiagnosed challenges in my school career, but I did all right. And
Yeah.
I've really thought about that as a like a primary head now, and we're seeing so many challenges in what we do, that actually there are some core things that are not really linked to education that got me through my school career. You know, my family life, the stability, the emotional support I had, the key characters in my life, that I was motivated as a youngster. I was encouraged to stretch myself, like the connections I had with people. And when you do lots of reading around education and, you know, supporting children, especially those that emotionally struggle, they are the key words that come up. And I can see that in my own school journey.
Yeah, that's so fascinating to hear. You can already unpick some of the things that helped you, and I guess it's how things have changed, isn't it? How things have changed in education, because I speak to lots of people who said, well, like when I was at school, it just wasn't that way. These things weren't necessarily picked up on, I wasn't supported. But you're right, you've done blooming amazing. You're such an inspirational leader. And it's interesting you said about university, because I wonder whether that's something around like choice. I found with educational, once I started being able to make choices about what I learned, I was way more engaged, and choices about which teachers I wanted to be with, like that connection was really important. I think a lot of people sometimes feel it's a bit done unto us, isn't it? And then when we get to make those choices, it's different. There's also choices at uni where you don't attend. I did a little bit of that. Anyway,
It's all part of a
we won't go
well-rounded
into that.
university experience, though,
Of
Emma.
course it is, of
And let's
course
not go.
it
I
is.
know we went to the same university and we could share lots of stories. That's a different podcast, though, so
Yeah,
let's not go in
right.
that
We'll do
direction.
that one later. I can't get started on that. So when, like, can you remember a time when you started thinking about going into education as a career? So you, like, you talked about people who influenced you, but can you remember like thinking about making that choice?
It was them. Like Mr. De Silva, my primary school head teacher, was just a legend. And the only way I can describe him, he was a legend. And I was so anxious about going to school. And it was his smile on the gate, it was his Brummie accent that, you know, stood out in Cornwall and made him different. He stood out to me. He was such a, you know, charismatic guy, that took so much time for all the pupils that were there. And it wasn't necessarily that he always invested the time in me, but I saw him investing time in my friends and others that were struggling. And he was a keen football and rugby man, and I think we had a connection. And I just straight away was like, I'm going to be a primary school head, you know. And I thought that, but then I sort of repressed that a little bit. And when I went to secondary school, my dad was secondary school assistant head, and I met my second big figure in my life, Benji Thomas. A lot of us that went to his funeral when he sadly passed because of the imprint he left in, and it was one of the biggest attended funerals in Cornwall. It was so touching to see educationists from across the county there because of the imprint that he left in so many people. And again, he was somebody that always had time for people. You know, in his busy life, he always had time to give to people. And education is about young people and the people we work with. And I think that will be a common theme of anything I talk about, is the science of people and how people interact. I find it so interesting, and I think it's so important. And I don't truly believe you can be an educator or a leader if you can't make those connections with people and understand people. It's a really tricky job to do,
Yeah, I
if you
think I'd add to
don't do
that, you
that.
can't be a great leader if you can't do that. There's people out there doing it who don't necessarily have those skills, but they're hard to teach, aren't they? I have to say, like, I've got goose pimples when you started talking about the people who influence you, because we're so busy, aren't we, in our jobs? And I think neither of us will shy away from saying how incredibly challenging it is to work in leadership or in education at any level at the moment. But having those conversations about the people that made a difference to you, that's why we do it deep down, isn't it? And I just kept thinking, oh my gosh, Lewis, but you, that's you, like you are that person to so many kids that I've seen work with you, like right from the start of your teaching career. That's what people would definitely say, you're a bit of a legend. Very funny, funny chap, but you're so passionate about it, and it's that making a difference, isn't it? Even though at times it's so incredibly challenging.
I
So
think so, definitely.
tell me a bit about, and it's fascinating to hear that you kind of that had that point where you thought, that's the job I'm going to do. I definitely wasn't like that. I was thinking, I'm not going to do that job. I wouldn't even have thought about it. I sort of got thrown into it. So tell me about like the journey then, kind of from uni. What did you do at uni, and then how did you get into the teaching bit?
Yeah, so I then did a sports science degree. I had a place on psychology and then succumbed to the, my inner voice of just do a sports science degree, you'll love it. And I did, it is my passion, and I really enjoyed my 3 years of doing sports science, and then did a PGCE as a trained PE teacher on top with a primary specialism, but just to keep that door open. But I wanted to be a secondary PE teacher. I then went and did placements in a secondary school for PE, and hats off to our secondary colleagues, but it really wasn't for me. I realized that actually I like to be creative with my lesson planning, and actually it wasn't being absorbed by the not all the students, but there were large groups of the students that actually they didn't appreciate that as much as when, in contrast, I did any primary based placements in my PGCE, where children would just love it and they would just absorb it. So I think probably I bowed away from the secondary journey and thought actually I feel my values and my personality is far better suited to that primary age, and it was the best decision I made. I still didn't go straight into a primary school. I actually got a job working for Exeter Chiefs, and I was in their community department the first time that the department got created, as they just got promoted into the Premiership. And I wrote programs for primary schools, delivered tag rugby and maths in primary schools, and all of this experience just reconfirmed really that's where I want to be a teacher. I want to be in a primary school, and I want to be working with this age of pupils. So I squeezed in a bit of travelling. Me and my now wife had 8 months away. She was already teaching in a primary school. You can imagine our evening discussions are riveting.
Riveting.
But we then got back, and I did a bit of volunteering. It was actually quite tough. I think Devon was a hard place to get a job at that point. There were recruitment drives happening, lots of applicants for jobs. A trust of schools took a punt on a secondary trained teacher, and I went to the interview, and the rest is history. And I landed a small village school where we met Emma, and some of my best memories are in my early teaching career in that village school.
Oh, we had the best time. I was talking about
It
it
was
the other
amazing.
day. Like just and I, what I often reflect upon, and the conversations, if ever we meet or other members of the team, we're still really great friends. What I always look back on at that point, and I don't know if this is just time and it's just about, that stage of our careers or where we were in education system, but we just laughed so much. We had so much fun. I think that's part of our personalities, but I feel like there's been a real shift in education. I've had some conversations recently with people just about how some of that joy is just not there, or it's harder to get it. We're just not laughing, we're not having as much fun. But I mean, still now, sometimes I could be an absolute hysterics thinking about some of the fun we got up to. And sometimes that's just a small primary school, isn't it? But we definitely enjoyed ourselves there.
I don't know if it is. It was pretty special. You were ahead at the time, but the culture you created was a real sweet spot in my career. Now, I don't think it'll ever be replicated. There's times where I felt it in groups that I've worked with, in a different way. But what you had was a teaching team that was so tight, that values really aligned, but had enough sort of psychological safety, if you put it like that, to challenge each other. What a high functioning team. Like, it was just a high functioning team. We'd think of something the day before, it'd be implemented by tomorrow. And actually, you don't get that. You don't get that in many workplaces. And we were really lucky to have that. But what I think is a real credit to us is we could have sat safe and pretty in that. And instead we went to take on the challenge, which was to move our leadership on further. And that's not just you, myself and other colleagues there are now leaders. We're all sort of leaders in our own right. And that move we made to a change of schools, a slightly bigger school, obviously as deputy head with you, Emma, in that rural school, I think that was a really good decision for us because it gave us something different. It gave us a new challenge, and a new mountain or hurdle to overcome.
Mountain's a good way of
Put it
talking about
like
it, isn't
that.
it? Oh my gosh, yeah. But
The
we did amazing things. So you're very kind and lovely. Tell me a bit more about then some, and I guess you've talked about some of your early influences, like people who influenced your educational mindset and your values and things like that. Are there some other people you know, or big wigs, big names, people you read about, that kind of thing, that influence and inspire you?
Yeah, I take my inspiration all the time. Like you've got the everyday heroes, and so many of my colleagues and teachers that I see that I just have so much admiration for, especially more recently when I think the challenges are unprecedented, really. And the community that I now work in and the school that I'm head of, there's a lot of social deprivation, there's a lot of challenges. And I've got colleagues that just spring into school, and their one mission is to, teach those children relentlessly through values that just impart them with not just knowledge and skills, but a feeling of awe and joy. And it's those colleagues that I take a lot of inspiration for. I know I've mentioned yourself, Emma, but I think, a lot of my leadership, my values and principles have been drawn upon good leadership that I've had. From yourself and from others. And I think of people like Claire, who we both know, Claire Fegan, who I know every time I have a moment with her, I'm learning all the time. And there's so many people I can think of that I just have, because the challenges in education, and how hard it can be to, do day-to-day management of a school as well as strategic thinking and try and align those two things together. I just have so much time when I hear those people speak. And I always, I feel sometimes I'm a bit like, I can't get enough of it. It's amazing. But yeah, I think also you take inspiration from when things aren't going well. And you take inspiration from times of challenge. And there's a sign you've left in our office. I call it our office. There's always a place for you there, Emma, to come back.
I've come for a cup of tea, that's it.
Do you remember the quote that's on that sign and it's still there?
Yes, I do. I had it at our small school as well, didn't I? Life's not
Yeah.
about waiting for the storm to pass, it's about learning to dance in the rain. It's very cheesy,
I like cheesy
but it's
though, because
good.
but yeah, if you take the cheese away from that and actually think about the meaning of it, you need to be learning in those hard times. So if we're not role modeling that to our students, especially when you work in a school that's got a challenging learner profile, if you're not modeling struggle and how you can overcome that, how are we truly installing those values in our young people? And that's why it is a people game for me, and that's why it is a job that will always be about the people that we work in and the teams that we work in, because that's what we're installing in our youngsters. And so that's always got to come across from my colleagues. And I think that's so important that they see that positive interaction and they see people taking inspiration from others and talking positively about others. Because that's just
Yeah.
not natural in the current social media, that we see and the current news that we see. Our young people aren't getting much of that, and so it's our job to make sure that they see that all the time.
Yeah, I agree. You talked a little bit about your dad being in like leadership positions, and I guess I don't know, other family members in education. Would you say that you and your dad have lots of conversations about education? Are you like similar in your leadership, or how
Yeah,
does that work?
I think it's slightly different. Look, he's I think he's had to do some hard roles. So, he's had to work in a secondary school as a lead in behaviour and attendance. I mean, that just comes with a whole heap of challenges that you've got to sift through. But I think things that I've really taken from him and others that I've mentioned already is he's got such grit. He's a very empathetic man, so he's got a lot of emotional literacy. Like he's able to understand people's feelings quite well. He's honest and hardworking. Yes, he's a sports buff as well, and I think that connects to me. But yeah, that I really take from him. And I think of even like my wife Claire. She is an early years practitioner, now a head of a school part time, but she has those same qualities. I tend to be drawn towards people that are gritty in their nature, very empathetic, good people, you know, people honest and
People.
hardworking. And those values, like, I can almost tick those off in the people that I like to surround myself with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to lift you up, isn't it? And especially in those challenges that we see at the moment, which we'll get onto in a minute. So you talked a bit about kind of like this, how important it is to be a people person. And when you said that, it made me, I'm interested to know, are there people who've not inspired you, but you've seen practice like leadership practice or other that you felt is it really goes against your values, or you don't like, or it doesn't align, and you feel at odds with it? Like, are there those people that you've learned what not to do from?
Massively. Sometimes it's hard though. Like, I feel you need cognitive diversity. You really do. And a lot of what the reading that I've done is around that cognitive diversity. Because if you fill a large workplace with people that think the same and align completely with your values, you've got to be really careful that in leadership that you're narrowing your lens of focus a little bit. So I have a lot of admiration still for people that maybe are more analytical than I am. That's not a massive strength of mine, naturally. I've got to be honest. Are more, you know, relentlessly organized than I am. Again, not a huge natural strength of mine. I have to work really hard at that. It probably comes from some of my dyslexic tendencies. But again, I think those people that I work with that have those, they probably equally play off my strengths as a leader, and that makes a good blend within a leadership group. So I don't always think there's a wrong way to do it. There's different ways to do it. But I do feel within a team of people, when you're working in education, you have to have those leaders that have some of the values we've spoken a lot about.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would work without that. So I think it's just making sure that you have that diversity, but you have some of those core values within any leadership group that you work.
Yeah, and I guess having those people skills and that awareness, absolutely, you can have really different ideas and values, can't you? Because you're willing to accept other people's viewpoints. But if you don't have that ability to understand others, that can be quite challenging if you're not willing to, if that other person isn't willing to accept your ideas. And I think there's certainly a split sometimes in the people who've got grit, but maybe not that the personality and the ability to listen to others. You know, you sometimes hear about that kind of hard leadership, and that I guess feels a little bit different to what we're talking about. So we've touched a little bit on the challenges because it's rough right now. Tell us a bit about, and it might not be right now, it might be other times in your career, I guess. What are the biggest issues that you've faced in leadership at like at any level?
I think the first one that springs to mind now at the moment is inclusion. You know, there's a huge challenge with inclusion in Devon at the moment. I don't think it's really well reported, but nationally, you know, your green paper and the white paper, that's all about the SEND focus of our schools and making sure that SEND is in everything that we do. But my biggest challenge with that is trying to be an inclusive school, which massively at my current workplace we're doing, and the challenges that that brings, when you know that you're trying to do it with limited resources, and that's well reported, and the knock-on impact that that's going to have on some of the headline data, on some of your attendance data, but in the North Star vision of actually providing for every child in the county, you're sticking true to that. You know, you have to take that hit along the way. And I feel like you need to be relentless in your approach that, you know, headline data is really, really important. You know, your school has to add value to children from on entry and when they leave. Attendance in school is equally as important. But behind those challenges of data and attendance, there are real life issues happening for those young people and for those families. That takes a huge amount of resource to overcome. And unfortunately, I find it really difficult when I see inclusion not happening, or at schools not being fully inclusive, and the pressures that puts on our colleagues that are being inclusive by nature. And I think it's just trying to unify that approach. And I think the government are trying to really catch up with that with their documentation around alternative provisions and how schools are going to provide for more of our students from with SEND profiles. But I think that's in the short term, whilst that's catching up, that's a real challenge for us in our current workplace at the moment. But we have some real success stories, and it's the young people where they've come to you and they've turned things around and they've had their success, and that might not be that they're age related in reading, writing, and maths, but they've built sustained friendships and relationships, and they've got themselves settled, and they feel part of a community, and they've progressed and developed, and maybe not hit that target, but they're more likely to hit it when they get to GCSE now, and I think actually it's that long game, and that's just being, you know, strong enough as a leader to understand the role you're playing in that, but still being relentless in your approach to have strong outcomes. It's striking that balance. It's really striking that balance,
It's hard,
because
isn't
we
it?
want to keep we want to keep a curriculum to our schools. We want to keep a protect the primary schoolness of primary school, and
Get that
that's
joy
really
in,
hard.
like sometimes
Well, I
that's
suppose
what happens, isn't it?
challenge two is curriculum. You know, we've got so much more as primary school educators to deliver, and that's one teacher delivering 11 subjects, and all of a sudden overnight they're having to deliver those in a bespoke way that, you know, is layering objectives in a carefully planned approach, and their subject knowledge, you know, has to be of such a high level in those 11 different subjects. And I just
Good
feel
job,
for our
primary educators are blooming
teachers,
amazing, aren't they?
yeah,
Flipping
that's it.
heck.
And I think that in itself creates a pressure along with the inclusion. It's almost that perfect storm, and you can see that perfect storm forming in education at the moment. And it's what, how are we going to dance in this one? Because actually, you know, it's feeling quite overwhelming at times, but we've got to keep dancing, because if we don't, we're not going to be present in it, and our presence in it is going to be the most important thing. And I think that's where I'm at the moment, if I'm being really honest, is we will keep doing a ruddy good job with what we've got and being passionate about what's important. And people will see that, because actually the outcomes that you'll have for the children will follow. And it's just being really robust to make sure that you are maybe hearing things and the pressures from what you need to deliver from the Department for Education, alongside the local authority, alongside trust-wide developments, and actually going, this is for us and we're going to do this way. I think that's something I've picked up from you a bit, Emma, a lot actually, is actually being your own boss in a sense that you know what's right for your school. And I think that's a really important thing that all leaders need to hold on to.
You've got to be brave, haven't you? I think I'd say so. And I would say I definitely in the last few years found that more of a challenge than ever. I think being brave enough to say no to things and recognize that you need to do things in a different way. And you also, I thought along the way, you are very good at dancing. So I think you'll be very good at dancing through all this absolute chaos that it feels like at times. So what one of the things that and perfect storm just reminded me. I've said that so many times over the last sort of 6 months talking to leaders and different people working in education, because we've just been hit with all these challenges, and there's so many things in the news and the media about Ofsted accountability. It's just coming from all angles, and we're absolutely in a perfect storm. And one of the questions I was going to ask you is, if you had a magic wand, if you were some sort of weather guru and you could kind of sort it out, what do you think we need right now? We can't do it all, but what might it be to
We
help?
need we I think we need to empower our primary school educators to focus more on what builds a really resilient learner, what makes a good human being, citizenship, the learning values that we install in our young people. And I'll be honest, I speak to our secondary colleagues. My brother is a secondary colleague, a maths teacher, and they're not too fussed about, if they could change one thing, they wouldn't necessarily change them knowing everything about their subject area. What they would really change is their resilience as a learner and their learning skills and values. And I think sometimes we need to think about our role as primary educators is to take a child of 5 to 11. They're so young and they're getting so old so quick, but they're still children. and we need to protect them to be creative, to be joyful in their approach to learning, to take risks, to collaborate and communicate with each other, to be honest, to be kind. These are the values that I think are more important than whether they remember, what happened in Benin, years ago.
Yeah,
But
I
actually,
agree.
our framework at the moment doesn't empower that. It tries to layer that on top of a overwhelming curriculum at times.
Yeah.
And so I would probably wave my wand to say autonomy in your curriculum and allowing people to, do what they think is best for children in their community, and maybe a deeper dive into how children are as people and where they start on entry as people and how they finish on entry as people, as well as, and that's their personal development. And I'm glad that's in the framework. It's my favorite part of the framework is the personal development strand, because I think for primary school age children, that's so important. And in schools and communities like the one I'm currently working in, it's doubly important because we are providing for children that community and safe space that they maybe don't have elsewhere. And so I think more of a light on that, with a robust focus on teaching and learning, the outcomes will then follow, the educational outcomes and the curriculum will then follow. But we'll
It's
see.
so squished, isn't it? I
We'll
think
see.
we've had loads of curriculum conversations over the years that no one would argue with the fact that we want an amazing curriculum for our children, and that if they are ready and have all of the other foundational, personal development elements, that we can add really, really deep, fantastic knowledge into them and get it all in there and like amazing. But actually, I think you're so right. That's what's missing. And the educators that I talk to completely feel so stressed and stretched. They don't feel they've got that time to just spend getting to know their children, bringing the joy, having that fun with them, helping them to understand how to be a decent human being. We
But the
need to
thing is,
just
Emma,
scoop that curriculum off for a little bit, don't we?
it sounds too happy clappy. It sounds too
Let's just have
waffly.
fun.
It sounds too, where's the substance to that? So therefore, it's hard to monitor and hold people to account.
Yeah,
Well,
we just need
let's
good
not.
people though. Like, we just need good people in the world. You're
But
right,
let's
not
not be,
necessarily people
let's
in
be
Australia.
honest, it's not. If you shine a lens on that, it's easy to monitor and it's easy to account for. Like, are children happy? Can you see that happening? Are they joyous in their approach? And actually, if we think about our national challenges of increase in crime, increase in mental health in youngsters, they are massively the job we need to do. Because that, if we think of education sitting in a wider economy in the UK, if we learn from our Scandinavian colleagues, protecting childhood is the most important thing they do, and the crime rates are much lower, and the support they have in their communities is much better. And it's just, for me, like, when are we going to wake up and smell the issues that we've got nationally, and make some really strong changes and brave changes, that education is the route that you solve those. The outcomes are poor mental health in our youngsters, the worst it's ever been, crime rates being really high, antisocial behaviours in youngsters being really high, children not wanting to be in school, attendance rates the lowest they've been nationally for a long time. Well, maybe we need to change something that tackles those byproducts, those outcomes. And what we just discussed, I think, would definitely turn that around. But then that's a real heart and head moment, isn't it? Because I'm not working in a framework at the moment that supports me to do that. I'm working in a framework at the moment that needs to hold my subject leaders to account, to know everything about their subject, for data for our disadvantaged pupils to miraculously, overcome those of their non-disadvantaged pupils. And that's hard. That's really, really hard for all of our colleagues. But those that are trying to buck that trend and trying to overcome that difference, take away the Ofsted, take away the data. That's a sink in the background. Sorry, Emma. That's okay. When kids are in bed, we've got to get the dishes washed. Apologies.
You carry on, it
That's
was fun.
broken the flow now as well.
Oh,
It's
take Ofsted
it.
away, you were
What was I
saying.
saying? Yeah. If we strip that all away, what is actually important? Because we've seen all the press around Ofsted at the moment, and I firmly know my well-being is protected, and why I turn up to work every day is my vision is to do the best for my children in my community and to make them good people. And part of that is making sure they can read, and write and do maths, yes. But a large part of that is a whole other amount that we do as school leaders. And I can go to bed sleeping absolutely fine, disregarding the outcome of my school from Ofsted and from others, knowing that my parent community, if we were to receive a negative outcome in our next Ofsted, they would probably go to the national press because they know how much we
I'd
do for
argue
their
it.
children. Do you
Yeah,
know what I
good
mean?
for
And
them.
actually, that's really important, you know, for our leaders, that that's a snapshot judgment. It's important to hold us to account. It's getting a lot of negative press at the moment. But if you're doing everything within your power to do what you think is right for the children, then you're not going too far wrong.
No.
And you might learn from that, and we'll all make mistakes, and we may need to change our tact and what we're doing. And we may need to move to fit certain things that we can't control. But if you remain core in your values, then no matter what the outcome is, you can, I feel, be happy within yourself. And that's my approach. You know, I've had struggles, I've had mental health struggles. It's never led me to the point where I've had to have huge amounts of time off school, or any time off school, really. But I can see why it would for others, and why stress is a big factor in our leaders at the moment. I can see that. I think we as leaders need to build connections with people that look after us. And if I go back right back to our start of a discussion, why did I cope at school, like when I was a youngster and I had all these challenges? Actually, I surrounded myself with stability. I spoke. I'm a conscientious chap that will always speak my mind. I wear my heart on my sleeve. That helps me. That helps my emotional well-being. You know, I was always motivated, and I've got motivations in lots of different baskets. My eggs are spread in many different ways. You know, I've got friendship groups, I've got rugby outside, you know, I've got my family, I've got my, you know, I've got th things that I want to achieve outside of that, and that keeps me grounded, that keeps me focused. And the connection I have with people, you know, this discussion here, I know is filling my bucket because I'm speaking to somebody that I care about and I have a lot of time for. And I'm talking about something that I care about and have a lot of time for, and that will leave me feeling better. And I
Yeah.
think we've got to, as leaders, protect that time for ourselves. It's so important.
Your passion is so it's addictive. That's why I love talking to you about education and the things that you're doing, because you know, it seeps into everybody. That's why you're such a great leader, because you talk with such passion and honesty about it. I think Lewis for National Education Commissioner, you know, that's the way to go. Like, let's change the world. That'll be fun, wouldn't it?
If I could build my team around me, Emma, then I'd take it. But yeah, I wouldn't be taking it at the moment.
No,
But
maybe not. But let's hope.
that's a political conversation. Let's not go
Oh,
there.
let's not get into that. It's been so amazing to talk to you. Thank you so much. I'm going to ask you one last question. It will try and give me, like, not a one-word answer, but like a short answer. What do you think your leadership journey, what happens next in your leadership journey? Like, not in the next couple of years, but like in the bigger future, because you're still super young. So what other things do you think are on the horizon, or would you like to be on the horizon?
Keep making differences. And I think for me, if I cease to be able to make a difference in what I'm doing, that's when I need to move on to something else. And I've always been like that through my life. You know, I take a lot of pride in, you know, I feel us as leaders, and you'll be the same with this, Emma, like I've influenced people and I've been influenced by people. And, you know, the best thing that will happen when I retire is that I've got people that have spoken about how I've impacted them, and it's the legacy that you've left. I honestly think, like, the best bit of reading I've done is Legacy, the book by James Clear. But actually, that's not, it's about the legacy that is spoken about in the New Zealand All Black team. Is what have you left in the jersey when you go? And for me, it's when I hang up my jersey, how many young people, other colleagues, are going to be willing to take that jersey on, you know,
Yeah.
and continue that journey and make a difference? And I think that, for me as a leader, is the most important thing. It's like, what do you leave? Not so much what have you done, but what have you left behind you? You know, how many others are following in your footsteps, if you like?
Yeah. And how many other people have you impacted?
Yeah.
Well, and I know Lots of people, hundreds of people already in you're still really young in your leadership journey, whether that's in schools and education for the rest of your career or other. People, as I said, will already be describing you as a legend, and I'm sure they will continue to. So thank you so much. I've genuinely loved this conversation. I've learned loads of new things about you, which is so great. And I really hope people who are listening find it inspirational as well. And as I said, you talk with such passion that you just can't help but getting infected by it. So thank you so much for sharing that all with me.
I just need to say, Emma, people need to check out what you're doing because, at all the projects that you're looking to start, I've got so much admiration for. And if you need somebody that you need to reach out to, you've got to get in touch with Emma. And thank you for having me, Emma. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. I didn't even pay you to say that last bit. Well done.
No,
Right,
that's great.
we'll say goodbye. Thank you so much for listening to the Stories of School Leadership podcast. We'd love to know your thoughts on this episode. Get in touch and tell us what you think, and share this episode with colleagues so we can spread the word. If you'd like some support with leadership coaching, supervision, or consultancy, you can get in touch with me via the Stories of School Leadership Instagram account, or I'm Emma Lurie on LinkedIn, or you can send me an email. It's info@emmalurie.co.uk. I hope you have a great day, whatever you're up to next, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you. Goodbye.